Hope that works. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Maria. And my home group is the Our Common Problem Group in Largo, Florida. And we are book meetings on Tuesday night. We do the big book on Thursday night, the 12 and 12. And on Friday, the daily reflections. I like speaker meetings, but mostly I like book study meetings. They told me when I first got here I needed a big book meeting and a 12 and 12 meeting in my life, no matter what I did with the other 5 days a week. And my sobriety date is December 24th, 1986. And I've kept that. Whoa. I've kept that advice through the years. It's amazing. I can sit in a meeting and find a brand new thought or a brand new idea. And I think that was probably among the best advice that I received. What I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. I think I came into this world restless, irritable, and discontent. I know from a very, very young age, I was convinced that I just didn't have my share of what I deserved or what I needed. Everyone in the neighborhood had better clothes, nicer family, definitely a nicer family, and nicer furniture. I noticed material things from a really, really young age. And we were poor, but I don't know that we were that much different than the rest of the neighborhood. I mean, why I noticed such a difference. As far as family, some of that was somewhat legitimate. My father was 65 when I was born, and that was always a big problem to me. Other kids teased about, you know, had to be your grandpa, can't be your dad. It always bothered me. He didn't work. My mom went out to work to support the family. He wasn't well enough to work, but he was well enough to make it to the bar on a really regular basis and used to drag me along. And he kind of got in a difficulty with that in that the other old men in the tap room, we called them beer joints in Iowa, and the other old men would buy small bags of Planters peanuts. I think they were nickel bags. And if you collected enough, you could send away to get comic books or coloring books. And being a toddler, I, of course, couldn't make up my own mail away for that, so I asked my mother's help, and she caught the clue that I had, 25 bags of Planters peanuts and enough to get a coloring book, and she wasn't pleased that that's where I would be spending my time. And so his way around that was to lock me in the yard. We had a fence, a gate, and while he disappeared for the day. Well, if I couldn't get out, you know, of these exciting locks that he devised, the neighbors would help me to get out. And it was always a hassle to get back over the fence before he got home, see him coming down the road and get back over the fence. So otherwise, I started out at a really young age of doing just pretty much what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it, and didn't let too much hold me back. By the time I got into school, I really liked attention, and my way of getting attention was to be a really good student. And evidently, I was somewhat bright. I made all the honor rolls and teacher's pet and did really, really well. Probably until, oh, I don't know, fourth, fifth grade, I found a group of kids that weren't impressed with honor rolls and teacher's pet. And I learned how to skip school, and I learned how to... I'm not sure when beer and red wine entered the picture, but it was a pretty young age. I heard the first speaker mention 13. I think mine may have been a little sooner than that. I got terribly sick. Red wine, I'm talking Chianti, you know. They called it Dago Red. And I got really sick. And beer, really sick. And my thought was, I was just embarrassed about that being sick. I thought I just, you know, didn't know how to do it well. And if I practiced a little bit, I'd get over that sickness and wouldn't have to be embarrassed anymore. And I worked real hard at practicing to be able to drink as much as I wanted without... Now that I look back, I think I probably drank too darn much to begin with. I didn't look at it that way then, but... And I must have known or figured out that I had a problem by the time I was around 16. I can remember quitting drinking. I had gotten angry and left my folks' home. Got a efficiency apartment in the house next door. It was a college town. And I had my own little apartment while I was still in high school. And the rest of the people living in the house were college students, and I just fit in really, really well. A couple of them had young children, and I was useful as a babysitter. And I had started working on my own at a very early age. I always knew that if I wanted the finer things in life, the nicer clothes, whatever, I knew that I had to work. And I can remember quitting drinking probably at around 16. And telling everybody, no, thank you, I'm not drinking. I've quit. I've given up. And I don't know how long that lasted. I, you know, might have been a week, might have been 2 weeks. I don't remember. But I've heard since coming around the program that people who don't have a problem with alcohol don't quit drinking. They don't think about it. So I probably could have qualified at a really young age. I graduated high school, and I graduated early because I had skipped a couple of years during elementary school. In my day, if the school was overcrowded, they would just take a bright kid and move them ahead a year or so. So I did that twice during elementary school. And when I graduated, I had a girlfriend. One of the girls that had lived in the apartment building had moved to Philadelphia already. And I thought it would just be the greatest thing in the world to follow her out there. And so I landed in the big city at a really young age. I think I probably was there a week before she introduced me to someone who worked with her, who also owned a bar. And it was an exciting little bar. And I jumped right in to be as helpful and have as much fun as I could have. Tried to work, or always worked, but it's really hard to work at 6 o'clock in the morning when you've been closing the bar at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I had quite a few different jobs in the beginning before I figured out to calm down a little. My daughter was born when I was 19. And somehow or other, I was given the good grace to calm down with the bar scene and the club scene. I had really gotten involved. You know, how I failed to become a headline or an obituary is purely the grace of God. I was every mother's nightmare. But the daughter being born at 19, I decided to settle down. I immediately stopped going into bars, stopped going to nightclubs, and all my drinking was at home. My kitchen table, your kitchen table, backyard barbecues, any possible occasion to drink or to party. But my friends became other folks that had little ones. And I patted myself on the back and said, you know, I'm a really good mother because I'm there with her. I'm not out running. Of course, I might have been there with her, passed out. I did get over the getting sick part, unless I really got carried away. But I never quite got over that. I was a sleepy drunk. You know, I'd pass out at the drop of a hat. And never quite got over the quantity or the amount that it would take to do that. I started with a company and was able to work my way up into upper level management, stayed with the same company for 17 years, did quite well for a girl. Yeah. We left him when she was 6 years old, and I did all right. Nice house, decent car. I was able to provide for her all those material things that I had been deprived of in my childhood. She had the dancing lessons, the music lessons, the trip to France with the French club, private school, because she couldn't get along in public school for high school. And I would have told you I was a great mom, you know. But what I failed to remember was I was passed out on the couch, maybe the living room floor, could have been the bathroom floor. I was a sleepy drunk. And one of the things that really bothered me with my own father was with his drinking, he would forget what we had talked about the day before. He would forget that he had given me permission to go somewhere. And the angry arguments about, where are you going? And I didn't say that. And my own daughter was able to experience that same thing. I'd ask her what time she got home last night, and she would tell me that I should remember because we sat and talked together. Or, where are you getting ready to go? And, well, don't you remember? You said you'd take us roller skating or to the basketball game or whatever. You know, I really, really don't like people who drink and drive. Didn't then either. But somehow or other, on a real regular basis, I would have my kid in the car and probably two or three of her friends, and I would be totally, totally unfit to drive. Not just my kid, but other kids were subjected to that. You know, through the grace of God again, nothing tragic occurred, but it so could have. And of course, the next day, well, I'd pat myself on the back for being there and being available to her. That made me a great mom, of course. But the next day, I would realize that and promise myself that I would never do that again. You know, I realized how really stupid and dangerous it was. And as the DUI fines got greater and greater, I really started to realize, you know, not so much, God forbid, I would kill someone, my family or your family, but God forbid I would have a fine that I would be financially unable to pay or have to do without my car. Wouldn't that be tragic? You know, my thinking was not what I would have wanted it to be. And that's the whole point about the drinking. I didn't live up to my own standards. And as the years went by, I totally, totally realized that. I went from weekends and holiday partying to an everyday drink yourself into sleep. It got to the point that every morning, as I was getting ready for work, I'd look in the mirror and just could not stand the fact that I couldn't remember what went on the night before, or God forbid, I did remember what went on the night before. And I knew that I was totally, totally ruining my mind. Now, I never worried about my liver too much. or my stomach. Now I know that those pains that I had in my back were probably my liver. But at the time, I never worried too much about that, but I knew I was causing my mind to brown out. I knew I was destroying my memory and my brain. I was very rigid with myself. I never missed work. Never missed work. For years, I would go without having a sick day. If my kid wasn't being hospitalized or sick, I would never have taken a sick day. Of course, I was probably so hungover that I was browned out until 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It was almost as if I'd come awake and wonder, what have I done so far today? I hope I did it well. And evidently, I was a good little robot because I did quite well on the job. But I really got to the point that I was totally disappointed with the promises to myself, the no driving promises, I'm going to stay sober with this group of people, I won't embarrass myself promises that only lasted until 5 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever time I got off work. And there came a night that I was invited. I took an old guy from the job to drop him off at the bar because his car was in the shop, and he invited me in. And he had to repay me with a drink. Now, this bar was full of really senior citizens. I was the youngest thing in the house. And yet, that one drink turned into hours. And as I drove home, covering one eye, trying to make the lines stay together, I realized that there's just no way I could control this alcohol business. This one drink had become who knew how many. Here I was driving again, and we're talking probably 40 minutes away from home, superhighway, expressway, covering my eye and trying to get home. And as I got home, I turned on a talk radio station and heard a guy talking about, he didn't say Alcoholics Anonymous. He talked about his life was really a mess. He couldn't drink when he wanted to or not drink when he wanted to. His wife and kids were just totally over him. Even the dog ran in to hide when he walked in the house. He was losing his job, life was a mess, and he found a group of people and a way of life, and now, you know, the wife loved him and the dog loved him and the kids play with him now. In fact, he talked about taking a son to a ball game that day, and I sat there and just boo-hooed. Because my life was a mess. And I decided to call. I had a woman work for me maybe 3 years before that. In fact, we had partied together, holidays and weekends. And her husband had went into a 28-day treatment center. And he had joined Alcoholics Anonymous, and she went into Al-Anon, and their whole life turned around. And she had brought me a meditation book and several pamphlets. And I thought she was just being helpful. Helpful to me because I was studying for the ministry at that time. And I thought she was just giving a contribution to my study knowledge. And then I hadn't seen her for 3 years, but I hear from her occasionally, and life was really good for them due to the A's. And so at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, when I heard this radio program and went into my boohoos, I decided to call her and find out just what books he had read, maybe what diet he followed, what vitamins, whatever. And, of course, he answered. And I boohooed to him, and he listened to me, and he talked, and I was ready to go to sleep. And he wanted to know what I was doing the next night, because he'd like me to go with him to an AA meeting. And I thought that was the worst idea I had ever heard, because I wasn't that bad. I mean, it was good for him, but he really needed it. And, you know, I'm not really that bad. I could probably do it with a book or vitamins or... But I didn't know how to say no. I didn't know how to insult him. So I agreed to go to his stupid meeting with him the next night. And the next day was icy. Ice storm, and the TV was telling you if you didn't have a reason to be on the road, stay home. And I thought, phew, got out of that one. And he rang the doorbell. And the AA meeting was, surprisingly enough, right around the corner from my house. I mean, who knew? And I went with him, and the tears probably started as we walked into the place. It was at a Catholic retreat house, and the dining room, huge speaker meeting. I thought there may have been 200 or 300 people there. I know today that there was probably 60 or 70 there. But it seemed like a huge room full of people. And the girl who, it was a speaker discussion meeting, the girl who shared for 15-minute share convinced me that I did not belong there. She had child custody battles and all sorts of in and out of jails, in and out of rehab, homelessness, all of those things that didn't apply to my life. So one more time I said, you know, I knew I didn't belong there. And then they opened for discussion. And from the floor discussion, I walked out of that meeting knowing that whether I liked it or not, wasn't a mistake. I definitely belonged there. The funny thing about it was that voice on the radio at 2-3 o'clock in the morning was sitting at the table next to me. I could have reached out and touched him. And he opened his mouth and shared basically the same spiel that I had heard on the radio at 2 o'clock. And that kind of convinced me that maybe it wasn't an accident. Maybe it wasn't at all. And I I do have one big defect, though, and that's when I get interested in something, I jump in with both feet. And through the years, it had been astrology, astronomy, macrame, tarot cards, crystals, you name it. I would buy the book, take the class, jump in. And that, I'm here to tell you that that served me well in Alcoholics Anonymous. I bought the books immediately and had a couple people tell me, well, that's not a novel. You don't, the big book, you don't need to jump into reading that too soon. Wait until you learn how not to drink before you worry about going to those steps. That was just a couple of people. But the one little lady who I had met the first night, I found out she didn't have a car and she needed rides to meetings, and I thought, well, that's a way that I can be helpful. And I can ask her to be my sponsor, and that way I won't owe her too much if I'm driving her around. Yeah, no pride or ego here. And she didn't tell me anything about not rushing into the big book. She told me I needed one step meeting and one big book meeting every week. And she didn't care where I went the other days. Oh, I heard you needed to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. So I was ready to quit my job. That would have been impossible for me because I worked four 12-hour days and in management. And I thought, well, if I can't do that, you know, sobriety is more important, so I'll just quit and find another job. And she assured me that I could get sober just going to as many meetings as I could. If I wasn't working, I should go to a meeting. And I halfway believed her because on my days off, I would go to two or three to make up. So I still made that 90 meetings. So I'm not sure if I believed her all the way. And I heard you say that we should be fearless and thorough from the very start. We read that at every meeting. And I believed that, and I got right into doing the steps. Of course, I also opened up an account at Hazelden and ordered every step guide that they had in addition to the big book, and she assured me that maybe that was overcomplicating things. That maybe I could find the instructions in the front of the big book. And by the time, it's a custom where I'm from to go to religious retreats made up of AA people. And she took me with her to my first retreat. I was, you know, maybe 90 days sober. And she informed me that we would do that fourth step and fifth step thing there and that I would come prepared. And she insisted I also do my fifth step with the priest who was leading the retreat. And I didn't say instead of, it was also. And her reasoning on that was, while being a woman alcoholic experienced in the steps, she could love me and relate to me through that fourth and fifth step. But the priest who was leading the retreat was trained in psychology and family counseling, and that perhaps sharing it with him would be more helpful to me. And it was. It was very helpful. He pointed out things that I had never dreamed of looking at that way on that resentment list. And once seeing it on paper and once hearing it from another human being, it made all the sense in the world. And I couldn't believe that I hadn't been bright enough to know myself that well. It was, all I can say is, if you're putting it off because you're frightened of it, go ahead. It's the greatest thing in the world to be able to know that I'm the problem, and if I'm the problem, I can change. I can change me. But I had spent years thinking that it was his fault, whoever him was. And of course, it was my parents' fault, that nasty drunken father, and my untreated Al-Anon mother. I know I can look at it now, and I totally blamed her for subjecting us to that horrible man. And now, of course, I realize, what the heck could she have done, you know, a woman with three children on her own. And I also realized that home that I was so unhappy with and ashamed of had given me darn good skills and real values to get along. I had disobeyed those values. I had chose not to live along those moral lines, but I certainly had been offered the education in my family and in the schools I had attended. Of course, about the same time that the drinking and partying started, I decided that the church and the school didn't really fit in. I couldn't match the ideas up. So the best thing to do would be drop that. I evidently missed it because I attended quite a few different churches. I took quite a few different classes, looking for something when it was there. You know, through that fourth and fifth step, I realized it was there all along. I had made choices. My husband always says, I figured that when I was, you know, really old and about to pass over, then I would straighten up and come back to the morals of my childhood. But in the meantime, I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I caught on to AA from the very beginning, and God bless me, the sponsor, that little old lady that I chose, turned out to be the perfect thing for me. As I said, she didn't drive, so she needed rides to everything. But she had a hand that went up whenever they needed somebody to go to intergroup office and fold the newsletter. They needed someone to answer phones, someone to speak at a different meeting. We had lots of workshops put on by the what you would call sub-districts here. And she liked to attend those things. And they were usually on service, general service, intergroup, one way or another, H&I. And she liked to attend those things, so I was blessed to be there too, speaking at different meetings. Her hand would go up, and I just thought that's what you did in AA. I just never dawned on me that it could be any different. And she had a favorite saying that if you stay in the middle of the bed, you'll never fall out. And I, someone told me when I was maybe 3 or 4 months sober, I said how happy I was and how life was really good. Someone told me, oh, don't worry, that pink cloud will go, that's a pink cloud, and it'll go away. And I'm here to tell you that it's been almost 24 years, and life happens. You know, I've lost my mother, lost two sponsors that I love dearly, lost a husband. You know, life goes on. Last year, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and I went through the chemo and the radiation and the bald head and the tiredness and all that. But I'm here to tell you that I'm still on that pink cloud. What AA has done for me is allow me to have the attitude to face and make the best of whatever comes along. Our book tells us over and over, working with others will solve our problems. Working with others will lift my attitude. Staying busy and in the middle of AA has changed my whole life. I'm glad I didn't get what I would have settled for when I got here. You know, I thought it was the greatest thing in the world to wake up without a hangover, to wake up and remember what I did the night before and not to be ashamed. And in the beginning, that would have been all I was looking for. And I have a life that's like nothing I would have imagined. If anyone's sitting there wondering if they're in the right place, I've heard it said and I've seen it to be true. You're probably not here by accident. You're probably not here because there's nothing else on TV tonight. You know, chances are if you wander into these rooms, you might have the problem of alcoholism, and AA is definitely the best way that I can tell you to make that better and to give you a life too that's beyond your wildest dreams. And thank you for asking me here. Thank you.
My name is Brad. I'm an alcoholic. This is Dr. Bob's last message, delivered at the First International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you'll pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, Let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months and my strength does not return as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flash into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is and we understand what service is, so let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member of the tongue, and if we must use it, let us use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.